Welcome to Crossroads, the infrastructure podcast. This is your host, Andrew Vitelli, senior editor of Energy in the Americas for InfraLogic. Thank you for tuning in. Today on Crossroads, we have Robert Shaw, managing director of CBRE Investment Management's private infrastructure strategy. Robert, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Great. Well, thank you very much for having me.
I think our listeners, I'm sure, are familiar with CBRE, but perhaps more so for the firm's real estate practice. How long has CBRE been active in infrastructure as well?
People are obviously familiar with the four letters from their neighborhoods and by their offices. I mean, CBRE is the largest real asset services business in the world, leading practices in brokerage, facilities management, project management. One of the real key pillars of CBRE is CBRE Investment Management, which is approximately about a $150 billion real asset manager focusing on both real estate and infrastructure. Our infrastructure team joined CBRE IM in 2017 in an effort to really transition the platform from solely real estate to more of a real assets focus, really focusing in on the global mid-market. We see a lot of exciting opportunities between the infrastructure and real estate, really at the intersection of those two asset classes. And we've been really excited to join forces and begin to execute on those opportunities.
And Rob, were you there from the beginning? Did you join in 2017 when that was launched, or did you come on a little bit later?
Yeah, I joined at that time. CBRE bought an existing business, Caledon Capital Management. So the team joined in with CBRE Investment Management then, and it's been a really successful partnership.
And what was your background before joining the firm?
Yeah, so prior to joining the firm, I worked at Torreys in their private M&A practice group, really working for infrastructure funds, infrastructure-focused pension plans, and acquiring infrastructure assets. So was a service provider and then moved over and became an investor, and I've really enjoyed that part of the journey.
So you've been an infrastructure man your whole career?
Yes, and I feel the law background is helpful. I mean, obviously, infrastructure is very contract driven. We really focused at our shop on having really strong contracted revenues. And so having that legal background, I think, is helpful in that respect.
Well, it's interesting. Last time I was at CBRE's offices in February, the message I heard both from yourself and from some of your colleagues was that this moment seemed to be purpose built for infrastructure. Now, I know 2 months kind of feels like an eternity in the current environment. But is that still the case? And if so, why is that the sentiment?
It's still the case. Obviously, we're moving a mile a minute in the news cycle these days. But I think if you look back in the last 5 to 10 years, we had COVID, inflation, high interest rates, and infrastructure returns really remained resilient. Now we're facing tariffs, global trade headwinds. Again, we think strong contracted infrastructure projects that really demonstrate core qualities of downside protection, stable income, inflation protection are really a benefit to investors' portfolios. In addition to really protecting the downside, which is a core focus of ours, you really get the benefit of these large mega trends of digitalization and decarbonization that really extend beyond any particular government or administration.
Now, another thing you mentioned is that CBRE looks for relative value when it comes to asset class, avoiding areas where you, what you described as irrational exuberance, and finding places that perhaps there are better relative opportunities. So at the moment, where do you see these opportunities?
Yeah, I mean, infrastructure is not unique as an asset class from an investment approach. Like, so much of investing is driven by cycles and capital flows. So if you look at our fund and how it has developed over time, I mean, we were early movers in the digital infrastructure space when it was really kind of an underappreciated asset. That's become more widely an infrastructure asset and really become an investment that people want to have strong exposure to. And we've really seen run up in valuations in that space. If you compare that against energy transition investments, which really in sort of 2019, 2020, 2021, when people were really piling in and there was a lot of funds coming, ESG related funds, sustainability related funds moving into that space, that really compressed valuations. And so we shied away from investing. As we've seen that area develop, obviously there's been challenges from interest rates, there's some headwinds politically for clean energy. And so we've seen those valuations and the capital flows into those specific strategies pull back. And so we're seeing some great buying opportunities there. And so one of the benefits we really see is of managing an open-end fund is really being able to be strategic with their allocations and really focusing on the best risk-adjusted returns.
And then in terms of size, CBRE is really focused in the mid-market, and at a time where a lot of firms are raising these mega funds. Why do you think that's the right strategy? And do you see advantages there?
I really think a lot is driven by capital flow. So you've seen recently in the infrastructure market, just a ton of capital getting concentrated in these large mega funds. And that's really distorting the infrastructure market. So you have a lot of capital up in the large cap space, but very few assets. And then in the mid cap space, you see not as much capital, but a lot of assets. And that's really creating buying opportunities in the mid cap space and selling opportunities in large cap space. I think those trends are really accelerated by what we're seeing in mid-market closed end funds, where, you know, it's a buyer's market right now. People are having challenges exiting their investments and having challenges raising their next funds. And so that's also creating a buying opportunity in the mid-market. And so what we see is a really compelling opportunity for investors is to buy in the mid-market, build strong platform companies, grow them, and seek to move them up into the large cap, where we really think you get a multiple expansion given the scarcity of quality assets up in that space.
So do you think as an investor, there's perhaps less competition for some of these mid-cap investments?
Yeah, that's right. I think that's what we've been seeing the past few years now. We've been seeing this dynamic play out where there's more and more buying opportunities. There's more opportunities to get things on a bilateral basis. So we're not dealing with competition or auction processes on different investments. And when you get those opportunities, I think you're able to cut yourself a better deal. You're able to get better alignment with the management team, which is hugely important when you're in the mid-market space, because you really want to be backing strong teams that have the ability to maintain their existing businesses, but really to grow their businesses with really quality contracted CapEx that can drive really strong, stable returns for investors.
Can you give any examples of the type of investment you're describing where you were able to buy it at the mid-market and then turn it into a large cap type investment?
Yeah, I mean, we've done it in a couple of different circumstances. We were an early mover, early investor in the data center space. We invested into a portfolio company, DataBank, back in 2016 when it had 6 data centers in 3 markets. I mean, that's now up to about 28 markets, 70 data centers. And we've seen really the multiples of that business really expand, where we bought in the low teens, and then it's recently been valued up in the high 20s. So you really get to see that strong multiple expansion as you move from the mid-market and execute and bring it into the large cap. We've also had a really strong experience with Accelerate, which is the land under infrastructure platform company that we established. And we've been successfully aggregating infrastructure sites in that business. And it's now up to about $500 million of invested capital. And we think as we continue to grow that, move it into large cap space, we'll get really the same benefit as DataBank has of really getting both a growth of the EBITDA and also a growth of the EBITDA multiple, which will really benefit our investors.
And what about your relationship with your LPs? You describe how you think there's investment opportunities are better in mid cap, but are LPs open to that also, or a lot of them want to be in some of these kind of super mega funds?
Yeah, I think when people are looking at their allocations to infrastructure, and I think I might be a bit colored being a Canadian, and obviously early movers in the infrastructure space and the pension plans in Canada have really been leaders in infrastructure. When we look at other markets, I mean, primarily the US LP market, there's an underweight to infrastructure. And typically when you're making a first allocation, there's some comfort in going with one of the large mega cap funds. And so we often see people will get their really core infrastructure exposure through those mega cap funds and then look to augment their portfolios with a really quality mid-market fund that can provide both cash yield that you can see in a core fund, but also the potential for growth and for multiple expansion, as I've been talking about so far on the podcast.
Well, very interesting. Now, I want to go back to something you discussed earlier. You said that when it comes to the energy transition, you're seeing opportunities there. Now, obviously, it's to be expected that some folks are pulling back because of the uncertainty, but there really are a lot of challenges up ahead. You have the uncertainty surrounding tariffs, which has been put on hold, but who knows for how long. And then you have possible changes to the IRA that have been contemplated, along with just executive orders that have made the playing field not as favorable for the renewable kinds of investments. So how do you navigate that, and how do you invest in that climate?
Yeah, this is a really fundamental and key question. We view the decarbonization infrastructure trend as a mega trend that is not beholden to a particular administration. If you look at what the current administration wants to achieve, they want to bring back onshore U.S. manufacturing. They want to be a leader in AI supercomputing. There's no way that they can accomplish those goals without sustainable electricity generation and storage. We're not going to build nuclear in the next 4 years. We're not going to build natural gas power plants in the next 4 years. The only possible source that's going to be able to fulfill the power demand is renewable generation and storage. And so, you know, there might be movements on the edge on the IRA. I mean, there've been U.S. Republican senators and congressmen who have come out against that and in support of the IRA. And even look at the first Trump administration, obviously there the ITCs were in existence there, and there were about 19 gigawatts of solar and 30 gigawatts of wind were built during his first administration. So I think you need to look past the noise and the headlines and really view the fundamental drivers of this infrastructure demand. And I think when you do that, you see that it's inevitable. We're going to have to continue to build renewable generation and storage, and we just need to be very intelligent by the way that we're playing the space. And as mentioned before, we think there's better relative value in this space now. And I think where we're really focused on is operating assets. And those operating assets, you know, you de-risk it from a tariff perspective, you de-risk it from an IRA perspective, because both of those things happen during construction. We think there's an opportunity to buy those assets. And we think operating assets will do very well in this situation where they do put in tariffs and they do cut the IRA, because that's going to increase the cost of building new assets. And if you still have strong power demand, the only variable that can move is power prices. And so we're spending a lot of time looking into that space.
When you talk about relative value, is that there for operating assets in this environment? Because I feel like to a degree, people are really pulling back on how they value a development pipeline, which maybe relatively puts operating assets at a premium. Or are there some folks who are saying, we don't want to touch renewables at all?
Yeah, you're right that the hardest hit part of the evaluations has really been development pipelines. We don't see a lot of value being placed in growth pipelines right now. But I still think, given the pullback of capital from the mid-market space and the pullback of capital of sustainability capital in the U.S., that's creating buying opportunities for operating projects. There's projects right now, especially that have come through their tax equity phase, where people are looking to sell those assets and reinvest money in other parts of their portfolios. And I think that's created a lot of volume of operating assets being put out to the market. And again, there isn't that strong support of capital waiting to buy them up. So we're seeing some failed processes, and we're seeing opportunities where you can get these assets at a fairly good valuation.
Very interesting. And when you're talking about operating assets, are you looking primarily at core renewables, wind, solar, batteries? Are there any other energy asset classes that are appealing to you?
That's where we spend the majority of our time, in those three categories. We're looking at the future of energy infrastructure. It's going to be more, but it's going to be more of those three. The supply chains are built out, absent potential tariff risks. The technology is proven. The contracting, particularly for solar and wind, was well tested. I think batteries still have some wood to chop on getting really strong contractual offtake, and that will continue. We think that will continue to develop as more and more batteries come onto the grid. But I think those three, energy generation and storage technologies, are really the backbone of how we're going to fulfill the demand that's coming onto the grid from data centers, from electrification of transportation, from electrification of buildings. I think those three are going to be the prime drivers of meeting that demand.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the electrification of buildings. You mentioned powering data centers. And I think you bring up an interesting point that I know CBRE has said before, which is that it's hard to separate energy from these other asset classes. Are you finding that to be the case?
Completely. And we actually spend a lot of time with our colleagues on the real estate side, really discussing power. If you look at a logistics facility now, like say 10 years ago, you're building a new logistics warehouse, you weren't concerned whether you could get sufficient power to build your facility. Now that's the number one issue. And so we see these two asset classes converging in order to build new high-tech logistics facilities that have automation in them. You're going to need to have power. And given where the utilities are and the constraints in the areas where these warehouses are, that really means you're going to need to bring your own power. And so we see more and more instances of people looking at microgrid solutions, people looking at rooftop solar, people looking at battery storage, backup, resilient gen sets. We think that's going to be a larger and larger discussion from real estate owners. We already see that right now for data centers, like that's clear, but I think it's going to be coming out to more and more different parts of the real estate market.
And how do you work with some of the other strategies to find synergies in your investments?
Yeah, that's a huge part of our strategy, is really to working with the broader CBRE platform. I think it's a unique differentiator for our business. It allows us to do two things. Like one, we can get more bilateral deals with management teams because they want to have access to the broader CBRE platform. And two, it helps us create value for our portfolio companies. Great example, we have a heavy-duty EV charging business called Forum Mobility that operates out of the ports of Long Beach, LA, Oakland, in California. One of the ways that we really work together with them is, you know, we have a logistics fund, so we own properties right around the ports, and we're working on co-locating charging onto our own properties. And then CBRE has the largest brokerage business for port-adjacent real estate, and so working to identify depots with our brokerage colleagues. So we really try to map out the different areas of CBRE that we can be helpful to our companies. And we really focus our investments in areas where we think there's real synergies between our infrastructure investment and the broader CBRE platform.
Yeah, it does seem like now more than ever, with power being such a key to unlocking everything, it does seem like that would be more of a factor than ever before, than even a few years ago. Now, outside of energy and renewables and the energy transition, what infrastructure sectors do you find intriguing and do you find relative value at the moment?
The other area of infrastructure that we've been spending a lot of time in is really building decarbonization. So we just completed at the end of last year an investment in Finland that was doing ground source heat pumps, really acting as essentially a utility of the building, providing heating and cooling services under long-term contracts. And again, this is an area where we think we're uniquely positioned to win with the broader CBRE platform. The Geonova is the business, and they're working with both CBRE IM and the assets that they own, CBRE Global Workplace Solutions, our facilities management business, to really drive more origination and install more heat pumps, ground source heat pumps into buildings. And we think this is a really important area to be active in, because as renewable energy becomes a larger part of the grids, and we start to electrify transportation assets, the last area where we're having a lot of fossil fuel use is really in buildings, natural gas boilers, natural gas furnaces. And we think there will be strong demand from customers and also strong push from governments to help to clean up and make sure that we have more sustainable electrified sources of heating and cooling in buildings. And we think that's going to be a real strong driver for infrastructure capital over the next 10 years.
Yeah, that's definitely something we're hearing more about. I guess the challenge there is taking that and creating a investable infrastructure opportunity. How do you go about that?
Yeah, it's scale is the main challenge. When you put in a ground source heat pump, they're relatively low-touch infrastructure assets. They have long-term contracts. You're, as I mentioned, you're essentially the utility. But the challenge is, how do you aggregate enough of those up in order to have a sufficiently scaled platform? And I think that's one of the areas that we excel at in our fund, focusing on the mid-market, focusing on leveraging the broader CBRE platform to drive origination, to help build those platform companies into really strong infrastructure assets that we can hopefully move up into that large cap space and create really nice platforms that either our investors can continue to get the benefit of those cash flows, or we can take advantage of the multiple expansion as we move from the mid-market to the large cap space.
Now, I think we're just about out of time, but before we go, I'm curious, you've been in infrastructure your whole career. Looking forward now, what sectors or what asset classes or what types of investments do you think we're going to be talking about 5 years from now that aren't really on anybody's radar, or at least aren't investable in 2025?
We've talked about a few of them. It's not that they're not investable right now, but I think they are just subscale or not fully developed. So I think in the next 5 years, what you're going to see is really there's going to be more investment into building decarbonization. So ground source heat pumps, energy efficiency, building retrofits. I think that's going to become a larger part of the infrastructure space. I think we're going to see more in electrification of transportation. I think that's an earlier stage infrastructure asset right now that really needs to be matured and built out as basically the supply chains of OEMs from the fleet side catch up to where they are at the commercial vehicle side. And then we also talked about batteries. I think that's going to be a big part of the next 5 years. There's a lot of batteries right now in the queue, in the utility queues to come online, but they're not quite yet at the stage like solar and wind is from a contracting basis. And so a lot of them now are focused on merchant revenue, so energy arbitrage through the day, some capacity contracts from the utility. I think we're going to see real developments in the contracting side of batteries, which makes them a more core infrastructure asset class.
Well, very interesting. We'll have to have you back on in 5 years to see how much of this turned out to be correct.
Awesome. Well, happy to do it. Hopefully I'm right.
Rob, thank you so much for joining the podcast. It was great having you on.
Really appreciate it. Thank you for the time.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning into Crossroads. If you enjoyed this podcast, please make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast player, and please give us a 5-star rating so others can find our podcast. Until next time, this has been Crossroads.